Welcome back, everyone. Got a special request from Nicole that if you could, I'm going to pass this sheet around, if you could just indicate whether you're on the coach tomorrow going both ways to Oxford and back, or just taking the return, that would be great. I know you've already indicated that, and it's some of it's marked on here, but she just wants to be sure about the numbers. So. Okay, so I'd like to introduce Shabakis, who is going to talk to us about the Ratmayamala. After his studies in Budapest, he obtained his doctorate from Oxford University under the supervision of Professor Sanderson for his edition of selected chapters of the Matsyendra Samhita, a 13th century Shaiva tantric yogi text. He joined the early Tantra project led by Dominic Goodall and Harunaga Isaacson in 2008 to produce a volume on the Ratmayamala, three chapters edited and translated, and is currently a research assistant at, is it ELTE University? ELTE University in Budapest. He's also presently a member of the ERC project Beyond Boundaries with the British Museum, collating the Raghuvamsha manuscripts and contributing to the edition of volume 2 of Vallabha's commentary on the Raghuvamsha.
Thank you, Mark. And I would like to thank Jim and Jason for inviting me to this wonderful event. So what I brought today is a short passage from the Brahmayamala, also known as the Pichumata. Just a few words about the text, very shortly. It's a very long text, more than 100 chapters, maybe 102 chapters, maybe 103 or 4, we are still not sure. Some folios are missing, some colophons might be missing, so we are a bit unsure, but more than 100 chapters. For analyses of the Brahmayamala, you can look up Professor Sanderson's articles, the 88 articles and the Shaiva Age article, and also Sharman Hatley's doctoral thesis, and also my volume on three chapters of the Brahmayamala. Dating, we tend to think that it's from about the 7th century. Again, see Professor Sanderson's Shaiva Age and Sharman Hatley's thesis on details. The Brahmayamala is one of the earliest Shaiva Tantras that came down to us, and it's probably the earliest Bhairava Tantra, or could be the earliest Bhairava Tantra. What has been edited or published so far? There are 5 chapters in Hatley's thesis, and a couple of additional chapters will be added in his forthcoming volume 1 on the Brahmayamala. There are 3 chapters in my volume, as I mentioned. The text I brought is chapter 44 of the Brahmayamala, a very short chapter, just 8 verses. But I think it's very difficult to understand the details. I certainly cannot really understand all the details. But I hope to receive some help today. There is an image of the oldest manuscript on the first page of the handout. And on the second page, there is a preliminary critical edition of this passage based on 4 manuscripts. I think there are 5 available for this chapter, so I should collate one more. But 4 have been collated. Details of the manuscripts, you can look up the handout. I mean, the last pages of the handout contain details on the manuscripts. But basically, manuscript A, the old Nepalese manuscript, is the only one to be taken really seriously. All the other manuscripts we have depend on manuscript A, or are descended from manuscript A, it seems. So they are not very useful. Manuscript A, the old Nepalese manuscript, has a very non-standard way of Sanskrit, non-standard language, Aisha, you could say. Manuscript B tends to correct most of these Aisha phenomena. Manuscript B has some very nice ideas about correcting the text, improving the text, but they are sometimes quite random, so not to be taken very seriously. Manuscript C is, I think, hopelessly corrupt, and D and E are also rather hopeless. So why this chapter, why I chose this chapter? First of all, it's short, so we can cover a whole chapter in an hour, hopefully. It's very typical of the Brahmayamala, as far as language is concerned. It's very, very difficult to understand. It's very obscure. It's very non-standard, very non-Paninian. It's not very typical in the sense that there are no sexual rituals, no impure substances this time. So it's not a very transgressive chapter. But the main reason I chose this chapter is that there are three chapters in the first half of the Brahmayamala which can be called yogic. The first half of the Brahmayamala seems to be a bit earlier than the second half. It could be the core of the text, the first 49 chapters. The yogic teachings of the second half of the text are really obscure to me. I mean, it's very hard to figure out what it's all about. It will take some more years to figure them out. But the first half contains these three chapters which are somehow connected and may shed some light on the yogic teachings, the early yogic teachings of the Brahmayana. These three chapters are the Nadi Sanchara Patala, it's chapter 36. Shaman Hatley originally planned to present that chapter. The second one is 41, the Bindu Patala, somehow connected to my chapter, to chapter 44. And the third one is 44, the Krida Karma Patala. On these three chapters, their interconnection, you can look up Shaman Hatley's forthcoming Toronto article. I think he has some remarks on these three chapters. This chapter I brought, chapter 44, teaches a meditational technique which could be called yogic. I'm not sure how yogic this is, but the Brahmayamala is not really a yogic text, so this is how far it we can go. And this teaching seems to be very similar to Parakaya Pravesha teachings, the science of entering another body, Parakaya Pravesha. There are some other chapters on Parakaya Pravesha in the Brahmayamala, and this one seems to be very similar. Parakaya Pravesha, of course, seems to be very important to the history of yoga. It appears in the Patanjali Yoga Shastra, or Yoga Sutra, as Parashariravesha. I think the idea is quite similar. It pops up in the epics and in later Matsyendra legends, and it's all over the place. It's a well-known technique, or siddhi, or sadhana, as you like. On Parakaya Pravesha, of course, you can consult David Gordon White's recent publications, Sinister Yogis, etc. And also Shaman Hatley's article on Parakaya Pravesha in the Tantrika Abhidhana Kosha, Volume 3. Before we start reading the text, I would like to draw your attention to some general problems we could discuss after we have finished the text. First of all, the reconstruction of the text. I mean, I would love to have your opinion on emendations, textual problems, etc., etc. As regards Parakaya Pravesha, I would like to hear your opinion on on the question how special this version is. Is there any other body here? Is it really a parakaya provision? Or there is nothing else than the practitioner? Is the Atman of the practitioner entering Shiva or Bhairava instead? So is it a special version of parakaya provision? Or is it both parakaya provision and something else? Is it rather a union with the deity? There is very little on the target body, on the para-sharira, the satya in this passage. And there is nothing on the technique of returning to one's own body, which is very suspicious, I think. It might be just an omission, of course. In other passages... Sorry? Yeah. But I think it's a very important technique to re-enter. It's a great omission.
You may not like what you find.
In other passages of Parakaya Pravesha, in the Brahmayamala, re-entering the one's own body is always mentioned. It's never forgotten. So is it rather a teaching on utkranti? What do you think?
Sorry, could you say about utkranti?
Is it a kind of utkranti? Yeah. Or is the dividing line between utkranti and Parakaya Pravesha, is it not a bit fluid. Also, Parakaya Pravesha is usually thought to be a siddhi, so a result of some sadhana, which you receive. I think in the Yoga Sutra, in the Patanjali Yoga Shastra, it's a kind of siddhi after some practice. And in Hatha Yogic texts, I think the case is similar. But here, I think it's a sadhana, it's not a result, it's not a siddhi, it's a technique. Of course, many details are still obscure, as you will see. The language is difficult, and it's just an early phase in understanding the Brahmayamala's teachings in general. What you have in the handout after the critical edition is... the verses quoted, and then some passages collected by me, trying to support or contradict ways of interpretation. So, just randomly collected passages helping us figuring out what's happening. But first of all, what is krida or kridana, kridate in the Brahmayama in other texts? I have the feeling that krida, kridate, etc., is these terms are usually connected with kamarupatva, changing forms, and also with svatantrata, so freedom of action. First quotation, perhaps, Brahmayamala 566, svechayusho mahayogi kridate aneka rupatrik. The great yogi can live as long as he wishes, and he can assume any sort of bodily form, aneka rupatrik. The next passage is very similar, svatantra sataka bhutva, so the sataka is free, independent, and he can have fun, he can amuse himself, he can act freely. It's very difficult to translate kridate. He can do what he wants.
Kridate usually has the idea of spontaneity, spontaneous self-expression. Unmotivated, joyful, spontaneous self-expression.
Yes. And also in the next line you have sarva deheshu kridate. Again, the ability to assume different bodily forms. sarva yogeshu, maybe sarva lokeshu, patavadishu, in different words, so not only on earth. The next bit demonstrates that you can have this kind of freedom and playfulness even in the cremation ground. But I think the context is different, as Judith has just pointed out to me, that there's some sort of dancing and real kind of playing going around in this chapter. So this kind of kridana could be another business. The next citation states that this kind of krida ritual or krida action is the best way to protect the tantra, which is rather tantra sanrakshanam, rather odd phrase. And of course, kridana is also connected with Bhairava. I mean, in the next quotation, you can see that the yogi will be able to play as freely as Bhairava can. And also, the Bindupatala is talking about vikridana kriya, which may or may not be similar to this chapter. But the Bindupatala, again, is very obscure, so it would need some more work to know if it's talking about this very ritual or something else. First verse, if you don't have any objection or comments. Atah urtvam samasina kridakarman nibodhame. Yamsthitam sarvasatvanam shapanugraha karina. Several problems, of course. Atah urtvam, I mean, irregular sandha is not, it's not a big thing in the Brahmayamala, so I tend not to correct these kind of irregular sandhis. Kridakarman, maybe it's treated as an A-stem neutral word. Maybe kridakarman with an anusvara would be better, yes. Yam stands for yat, I'm quite sure. Stitam might be okay, or might be amended to stitva, as we will see. And shapa anugraha karina is karinam and karinah in the manuscripts. So we either amend it to karina, as I did, or karinoch, which is another possibility.
That seems to be more likely.
Yeah, so there are two possibilities. One translation could be the first attempt, could be the following. After this, hear from me in short the ritual of amusement, which has been established by stitam, or which takes place, or which can be performed, stitam, which can be realized with him who is the punisher and favorer of all beings, Bhairava. But the better one could be stitva for stitam, and shapa anugraha karinoch for a masculine nomination.
It seems to me the sense intended is yasmin stite. When that is in place, when that has been established, he becomes one who can curse or favor anyone in the world. Sarva satvanam.
Yes.
That's
the bottom.
So yasmin stite. Have you seen any other parallels that could be referred to as accusative absolutes? The logic of the passage seems to be that he becomes omnipotent.
Yes, yeah. If you look at this short passage I'm quoting here, I hope you have that.
In the notes.
Yes, just after the first line quoted, yes. Brahmayamala 46:61, second line, Maha Mandhana Hurvita Yam Sthitva Tu Shivo Bhavi. It is very parallel, I think.
Yes. And that's been set up then, and it's been achieved.
Yeah. Okay, second verse. Hridesi Kamalam Dhyatva, Vyuma Pankaja Sanyutam, let's stop here. The first pada is clear, of course, visualizing a lotus in his heart. But what is Vyuma Pankaja? I mean, I've collected some passages which can show you alternatives. Usually a Vyuma Padma or Vyuma Pankaja is above the head or on the head. If you look at the Svachanda Tantra quotation, Vyuman usually means on top of the head or above the head. But the same might be true for the Siddha Yogeshwari Mutta. If there's a Vyuma Padma, this is citation B, and there's a goddess in this Vyuma Padma, it's usually above the head, the goddess pouring some amrita on the head of the sadhak. But if we skip to, for example, quotation E, the Sharada Tilaka quotation, there you have Vyuma Pankaja interpreted by the commentator as a Matrika Padmam or a Varnabjam, if you look at the text in bold face. So kind of arrangement of mantric syllables, kind of yantric arrangement. We could also...
So you visualize an eight-petal lotus in the heart.
Yeah.
And on top of that, or in the center of that, you visualize a circle with another lotus inside it.
Yeah, I think so. So it's not. I don't think it's above the head. It's inside the heart.
Yeah.
I think that's
like in the
interview.
Yeah.
In the interview.
Yeah.
We don't want two centers here.
Okay. But have you ever seen Vyuma Padma as a circle? Or
well, Vyuma for a circle, yes.
Okay.
Commonly in descriptions of mandalas, etc., Vyuma is used for a circle.
Not only the Vyuma Rekha, which is one of the circles. And the one
that goes around the circle. Yeah,
the Akasha mandalas sometimes Vyoma, I mean a circle as well.
Yeah.
Squared and triangular.
Yeah.
So it could be just a circle, basically.
Yes.
But it could also be, that, as you said, I think the Hrid Vyoma came with the heart.
Yeah. Other possibilities include Vyuman as a syllable, ha, the syllable ha, or we could amend to Vyuma Panchaka, which is very frequent in the but I think that could be too much.
Five Vyumas.
Yeah. So probably. So the best solution could be that you visualize a lotus in your heart and also a circle inside the lotus.
I don't feel confident of that.
No, no, no.
It's a possibility.
Just guesses, I think. So verse 2, Padas CD, Bindumatyanyase Tamanam Vishvadehamayam Shubham. Note the very strange sandhi, nyasid atmanam, I guess, should be the original. But where is the bindu? Again, it should be in the heart, I think. It's not on the forehead, so it's a bindu, maybe bindus in the heart. There's several sets of bindus in the Brahmayamala. If you look at quotation B here, there is a bindvashtakam, eight bindus, also a bindu triam. So it's difficult to know for certain that it's one bindu in the heart, but it sounds logical.
So the bindu would be the center point of this visualized lotus.
Yeah, probably.
So rather in the middle, which is the bindu.
In the middle, which is the bindu, yes, the bindu is the centre point.
Not in the middle of the bindu.
No, no, that would be a bit difficult to fit in.
So he should install his self, his Atman, in the center of the bindu, or in the center, which is a bindu, in the bindu, basically, as containing the whole world, Vishwadehamayam. Not a very beautiful compound, but I think the meaning is something like that.
Vishwadehamayam. Embodying all bodies.
That would be better, yeah. Yeah, Shaman has tried to construct it as Vishwadeham Oyam, but I don't think that's a good way to.
But if they're talking about a Parakaya Pravesha, the ability of the yogi to transfer himself from one body to another at will, then the idea of his visualizing himself as embodying all bodies, all under his control, that might be relevant.
Mm.
Vishwa doesn't normally have that, quite that sense of every. It's interesting.
The universe, everything. Yeah. Well, it's not beautiful Sanskrit,
no.
I guess.
Somehow he's probably thinking he should visualize himself there as all embodied, as a Vishwa Maya.
Yeah. Which is, I think, quite normal, quite standard.
Yeah.
Okay, next verse.
Or like expanding to encompass all bodies. Yeah,
okay.
Both.
Okay, verse 3. Shakti pikiranupetam tarashtaka vipushitam tam dhyayet paramam rupam bindulinam shivatmakam. First of all, shakti pikiranupetam, I think, should be understood as shaktinam kiranopetam. So it's not with his shaktis or with shaktis and with rays of light, but I think with the shaktis as rays of light, which seems to me rather standard.
Well, how about shakti bi kirna rupabi rupetam? Surrounded, accompanied by his shaktis in the form of rays of light emanating from him.
I have some passages quoted here, which, I have some passages quoted here to show you that Sva Shakti Kirana and Shakti Kirana is very usual, very standard. So it's again, it's either an instrumental for genitive or
a kind of split compound, isn't it? For Shakti Kirana Upeta, Shakti Rubabi, Shakti Rubaya Kirana Upeta.
Of course, Tarashtaka is again a question. It could mean a lot of things. Of course, Tara can mean Pranava Om. But there seems to be a set of eight deities in the Brahmayamala, the Taradi deities, which, if I'm not mistaken, are Tara, Sutara, Tarani, Tarayanti, etc., quoted here. I'm not quite sure about this, and I tried to think of ways of amending it. Ashtashtaka is a very frequent word in the Brahmayamala. Again, a set of deities.
Tara being so specific, that's not so likely that Ashtashtaka would be corrupted to Tarashtaka, is it?
Mm.
Why did you like Tarashtaka? Suspicious of it?
Good question. Why this set of deities? Why not something more general? Or
might just be stars.
And could be of course stars. Yes.
Cute, unusual.
Yeah.
But if you have a set of eight taras elsewhere in the text.
Yeah, in one far away corner of the text. So they are not central or not very clearly taught, I think.
They all have names which suggest moving from one thing to another.
Um,
R, A, and E. They're appropriate for kind of
mm-hmm.
saving.
Related to the 38 kalas, maybe, but they're also related to some song structure,
Yeah.
So you take it as Tara Adyashtaka, basically. You think that's the most likely interpretation?
Well, I'm not very happy about it,
no.
But I have nothing else.
It's a crux, really, isn't it? So we have to forget about going into other bodies.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I wouldn't try. Yeah.
The idea becomes more and more attractive as I get older, I must say.
Okay, verse 4 is similarly a bit obscure. Navasrotra vahi margi nadibhi parichodayet nadyantari mahadevi amanaskin yojayet. First of all, what are the Nava? Well, I think it's srotas, sis. So it's srot.
It's everywhere in the Brahmyana.
It's always like that. It's very standard to say srotra for srotas. So the nine currents, the
nine currents, nine apertures, nine nadis leading into the nine apertures.
I've just realized that srotas is also taught in the Ayurvedic texts as the apertures of the body, and there are nine for men, at least. But also in the Nadi Sanchara Patala, it's quotation A. Under this verse, you have a very obscure passage again. I think teaching nine goddesses, which are situated in this srotras or srotasis, Vama, Jeshta, Raudri, etc. And this is said to be a Navatmakam Chakram. So I think it's a network of nadis called either Navasrotra, Navasrotas, or Navatmakam Chakra. Of course, the number nine is all over in the Brahmayamala. The whole text is designed around the number nine.
Eight goddesses plus.
Yes, nine mandalas, etc. Maybe he should impel it, I guess, the Atman, maybe on the path which leads to the nine apertures of the body through this network of nadis.
Yeah, through these nadis.
What is nadyantari? I guess it's nadi antara.
Basically, nadi na madhye.
Yeah.
In the very center of the nadis, perhaps the central channel is envisaged here.
Yeah, or I thought of antara as an aperture, as the end of the tube,
Mukha.
Which is coming in the next verse, I think.
And then the amanaske suggests something transcendent, doesn't it?
Amanaske seems to be used in descriptions of Bhairava. So Bhairava is said to be amanaske, but it also seems to be a point in the body, in the subtle body. In quotation D, you can see Amanaske tathasmin tu layorti nishkalipadi. I'm not sure if I understand this, but it's a level, it's a point in the body, which is nishkala, which corresponds to the nishkala form of Vairava. And I think it is called the Amanaska pada, level, point. Maybe. But I guess Jason could know more about the Amanaska in the Brahmayama.
it does crop up a few times, and I asked Shane that just about it, and it seemed, as you're saying, either a description of Bhairava or a goddess, or it was used in two passages on meditation to denote no mental activity.
Mm. Mm. Okay.
Or you could consider Nadyadai. It's another mantra. Nadyadai.
Meaning Nadya?
Nadyadai is above the
Antara in the sense of Adara. And also I have a question about Marga, which is singular. You should drive it, presumably the self, through the channels on the Marga, singular, from which, on which, or in which the Navasotras flow, in which there is the flowing of the Navasotras. Why the singular?
Well, this could be one main channel.
You'd
and
expect
the
it to be the central channel, which is through some kind of word of Arechaka, the Sattva pushing up its self.
And then the nadis originate from the central channel.
From the central point, they go out to the sense apertures, nine apertures of the body. I haven't counted recently, but I think there are nine missing.
Right? Yeah. For men.
Not yonder. And then Chodana and then Niyojana. And Yojana or Niyojana is commonly used for this act of taking the soul of the jiva pushing it up to transcendence through the central channel, fusing it with Amaraska in this case, like Bhairava.
Mm.
So we've got two actions here, no? Two optatives for two actions. The first one, then the other.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So up and joining.
Yeah. Or out and then up. Out through.
Aha.
So
through what?
Now the antari maybe is tritiya. By means,
another one. through it, in it, through it. Through the central channel, actually, then fuse himself with that which transcends discursive mind, Amaraske in your jit.
Somehow I like the idea of antara meaning the opening of something. I mean, when it leaves the body, you can join it to the, but it's just a guess.
Can you cite an example of this usage?
Not yet.
Opening, does it mean the inner part or something?
No. I mean the
the end.
But not in. I think it's possible. I mean, I've seen it. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it seems to me there are two distinct actions here.
Yeah.
At least it's clear. One involving a plurality of nadis, and the other involving a singular nadi.
The first one still has that. So he pushes maybe with your nadi. He pushes onto the path which carries the navasrotas.
And that could be the central part.
That could be the central part.
It's after all singular.
And then maybe through this central tube, nadi on three, or ending of the tube, joins it.
Yes.
Yeah. You need someone who understands the essence of yoga.
What
else?
But
maybe, yeah, just one idea. Now the antare is a position of market, so rather, so marga is inside the nadi means that the center of all the nadis.
But why would one say that you should drive the Atman inside the nadis? I mean, it's obvious, and it's not outside.
I think it was instrumental.
Yeah.
Well, it's obvious that you would drive it inside the nadis.
I mean, not along or not round or something. Yeah.
So What is the oddity that it should be propelled outwards through the nadis of the senses, or that it should be raised upwards through the central nadi? Which is odd, so I don't quite
know. It's odd to emphasize that you do it inside the nadis. I mean,
oh, I see. As
I think it's
through them. I get your point.
I mean, yeah. So why saying that? It's obvious, I think.
Yeah. Inside the tube or through it.
In the tube, yeah. But I think this verse is quite clear compared to the next one, which is the lowest point, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought you would, you know, solve all my problems. So Satanam Purvat Kritva Nilinendu Krame Yadi Tamdrishtva Vyoma Deshetu Kala Deshetu Nirmime. Which seems to be clear is the first part, of course. I mean, having performed the sadhana as before, which might point to another chapter. My guess is the Bindupatala, which has some sort of similar teaching. And I think Nirmime at the very end is an optative from Nirma to visualize, to construct mentally. So Nirmimate, which is, I think, a standard form. So he should visualize that, the Atman. But the rest is very obscure. My latest idea about Indu, in Nilinendu, is that Indu stands for Bindu. So Indu for Bindu. Having merged the Atman in the Bindu, Nilina, or Bindulina, or something like that.
Now, if Indu actually means what it normally means, which is
moon.
The moon, and if so commonly the locative is merged with the instrumental
yep.
function, that means Chandra Kramena, then that could mean Apana Vahina through the ingoing breath.
Okay.
While breathing in. In the path or through the path of the moon, that's to say. Papaya, ingoing breath.
But why Nilina?
Well, there you have a double standard, wouldn't you? Let's see. Sadhana Purva, having done the sadhana as before, that's a back reference. Nilinendu Krame Yadi Tandrishva Arya. I do see it's a problem. So it could be Nilinam Indu Krame, a double sandhi, with loss of the Makara, which is quite common in this text.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the Atmana, which is Nilina.
To complicate things, the Bindupatala, which might be connected to this chapter in some way, has, I think, an Indu, which is really a moon, and moonlight, I think, reflected on water and something thrown into the water.
Mm.
So actual moon might be there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It gets clearer and clearer.
Yeah. And also, Vyoma Deshe and Kala Deshe. Very obscure.
Yeah.
Is this the moment when you were suspecting that he enters the other body? Or have you not reached that yet? Or is the moment?
I think it's just the last verse which mentions other bodies.
Could Nilina have something to do with either the moon setting or shrinking?
Yeah.
So in a sequence, a bit like Chandrayaan and Vrata, perhaps it's a sequential thing according to
I thought of that. I also thought of Kala Adeshe
yeah,
being
right.
a digit of the moon, actually. Maybe visualizing the Atman in the moon. Maybe kind of an alternative way of the Satana.
Now we're getting
it, yeah. The Vyoma might mean actually the air, or the sky.
I was just looking at my own notes on this passage, and I saw, and it's maybe to be careless of my part, I'm moving too quickly, but I have Amanaskena Yojayet.
It's not very clear in the manuscript, so you can read it like that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
In that case, he should unite the self with the Amanaska, with Bhairava beyond mind.
Yeah.
Neat Yoj is perhaps a little odd.
Yes, maybe it's better too. I want a ski. No.
I want a ski in the Yuji.
Mm.
And where should you do that? Nadyantare.
So do you think that there's a moon, or you just give? Do you think there's a moon and the sky?
I don't know.
Neither do I.
Ask someone who knows the essence of yoga.
Yeah.
Instructions already obscure, but just to say in another nadi would be.
Well, the nadi of the other person.
The target.
Ah.
If we're going to the other person now.
I don't think he's left his own body yet, has he? If he's going to, he hasn't left it yet. That's a bit unlikely. Because he's going to propel himself upwards with udana. It's coming up in a moment, I've just noticed it. Which implies that the self is actually low down in the center at this point.
But you have joined it with Amanaska?
No, I can adjust my view, no problem at all. We're groping forwards to a solution here as we read this text. Perhaps he's visualized in the Muladhara.
Nothing like that in the Brahmayamala.
No.
Maybe we should.
Having seen it in the Vyomadesha, having experienced himself in the Nadi Mukha, melted, having dissolved into the aperture, the mouth of the Nadi or Nadis, he should then drive himself upwards until, with the Udana, up to Swatattva, presumably means the highest reality, the reality of himself.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of himself. Then we have Puri again. Should we? Yes, he should drive it with the upgoing breath in the centre.
My guess has been to say, I mean, to connect Yavat and Purayat. And my guess was that Purayat is a breathing instruction, so while he's inhaling. That was my guess so far.
But you can't drive anything with Udana while you're inhaling.
Or maybe it's filling the other body.
Sorry?
He's driving it up for himself into the other body.
That could be. He just wants to get into the other body, not drive anything up. Later.
But I think it's only in the next verse that he gets out. Nirgatasya.
Yeah, that's the point.
Nirgatasya hiyo, I mean, Nirgatasya hiyo devi surya yuta soma prapnam, which might mean something like for the one who has, you know, got out, there is some big light, there is this big radiance. But hiyo must be corrupted. I mean, I'm sure that it's not original. I thought of inventing Aisha words like shriyo for shri. And also jyoti, some sort of metathesis. So there's a big radiance when this act of leaving the body happens.
So the idea, the model here would be that he somehow prepared the self through visualization. So he drives it up with the upgoing breath, the udana, the central breath, and then exits through the top of the head, perhaps?
I think so, yeah.
Can then enter into another body.
Yeah.
The risky moment between the two. He's out of his own, not into the other.
Out of his mind.
Self-confidence.
Yeah. But the last verse is rather clear, comparatively. So he will be able, no doubt, to live in the bodies of living beings of various forms, in the intermediate spaces on earth and in the underworlds. I think that's quite clear. And this indicates that it's some sort of parakaya pravesha.
Yeah, you can enter any embodied being, take over his body. Yeah.
isn't it very unusual not to instruct the sattak on returning? Or
this does seem to be slightly different, doesn't it?
Mm.
He has the power to leave his body and to enter any body, and one body after another, anyamanyeshu.
I thought of the cycle of rebirth also kind of implied. So it's death, utkranti, and then entering new bodies.
You want theoretical consistency also?
So that's what I brought. I'm sorry that it was so obscure. It was just an attempt.
It seems to be very useful in that regard. Everyone understand just how obscure the material is and how hard it is to imagine what on earth is being described, if anything.
Mm, yeah.
Is it actually describing a genuine practice or is it a kind of fantasy exercise? Mm.
And I think when we have edited, if we want to edit, these three chapters I mentioned, they might, you know, shed some light on each other, and there might come something, it might end up in something meaningful.
Mm.
So I think that
by, yeah. I mean, by correlating this with other passages, you won't have any chance of sorting it out.
Well, I'm working on it,
yeah.
But it's not very clear and not easy.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
but
it's so archaic, which makes it so much that it doesn't appear later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Flush out if the system became pared down and simplified.
Yeah. Many of the teachings of the Brahmayamala are not. You know, continued. They kind of end. It's a dead end. Yeah, it might be one of.
You see in other very early tantras like Nishwasa, many kind of false starts which just get dropped.
Mm-hmm.
They have no future history in the Shaiva tradition. Let's drop that.
Yeah.
Could the Nilina Indra be something to do with suppressing? Is Nilina suppressing the inward breath, and he brings the soul up to the top? Then doesn't breathe in again because he wants to push
his
into the
core,
or am I sort of
fixating? We have Lina in Bindu Lina, don't we? And then in Krame. Yeah. You expect first Kumbhaka, or Puraka, that would be the Indu Krame,
mm-hmm.
Not mentioned, but some holding of the breath, and then driving the breath up through the central channel, propelling the jiva out of the head. In someone's dreams, anyway.
And not only does it not tell you how to get back, it actually doesn't tell you how to get into the other one.
There are some passages, if you look at page.
Oh, this is not actually Prakaya Pravisha, it's Krida.
Mm.
So you just amuse yourself,
yeah.
Perhaps going from one body to the
mm.
other. So it's not the point to come back. But
like Shankara, according to myth, trying out what it's like to be in a woman's body.
Mm.
Isn't that one of the stories of his life?
But if you look at page 7, top of the page, you can see that usually it's the opana, vital breath, which drives you back or draws you back into your body. Opanina tatak shigram svadiham pravishidina. So that is the standard way of re-entering the body.
Mm.
Which chapter is that?
One quote. I mean, it starts on page 6, quotation B, bottom of the page.
Mm, I see.
It's chapter 3.
So why? But you don't think that chapter is yoga, particularly? A different method.
Well, chapter 3 is mostly about a mandala, and there is this very short bit on Parakaya Pravesha for some reason. I think it's yogic, yeah, in a sense, yes.
So we again start with the Chodana by Udana,
yes.
And then move into the Pashu's body,
yeah, yeah.
And the other body.
But then the target is named, I mean, it's indicated, and the return technique also. These passages are more less obscure, more intelligible.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
Okay, well, let's finish there then. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
So come back in 15 minutes. Should be hot water out there.